Ever since I've been a little boy, I have enjoyed reading the newspaper. Like many of you, I suspect I started off with the funny pages. And then I moved on to other sections, to sports and the arts, and of course, news and the op-ed page. Growing up outside of New York City, I was weaned on the Times. And I learned early on that if you want to find the most important story of the day, it's always in the right-hand column of the front page. If you want to get a sense of where the reporter's sympathies or biases lie, read to the end. And whoever is given the final quote is usually the person with whom that reporter sympathizes. There were all sorts of ways to read and interpret newspapers. But the most important thing to look for is probably one of the most fundamental, and I suspect that anybody here who worked on the school paper remembers the five W's and the one H. Any good story is going to talk about the who, the what, the where, the when, the why, and the how. Now, five of these six things should be theoretically easy to establish because they're supposed to be matters of fact. The who, the what, the where, the when, and the how. But the why is a different animal. The why involves supposition and theory because we're often dealing with motive and intent. With why, they're often looking into the dark, deep psyche, trying to understand what makes people tick, trying to fathom why they do certain things. A good story will usually tell you what you need to know in the first couple of paragraphs, often establishing the basic facts of who, what, where, when, how. To learn the why, you often have to go deeper and read on. Today's lesson from Mark follows this paradigm. It's like a good lead for a story that is all about Holy Week. We can find out what happens on Palm Sunday just by reading today's lesson. But if we want to understand what it means, we're going to have to go further. We're going to have to keep reading the story right through to the end, the final paragraph, which we'll read next Sunday. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's stay here on Palm Sunday. Let's consider the question of why. Now, oftentimes, it's easier to ask what than to ask why. And that's demonstrated in this story. Do you remember how Jesus prepped his disciples? He said, when you go to get the colt, if someone asks you, why are you doing this? Tell them the Lord needs it and we'll return it. And off they go to fetch the animal. And lo and behold, not surprisingly, the critter's owners want to know what they're up to. Someone just walked into your driveway and climbed into the car to drive off with it, you'd probably ask them too. But what's interesting, if you listen closely to the reading, is they don't ask them, why are you doing this, but what are you doing with the colt? And the disciples answer, as Jesus instructed them to. But that's the end of the discussion. Imagine what would have happened if they had posed the question that Jesus had suggested might come their way. Why are you taking this colt? Why are you doing this? What would the disciples have said? We don't know. How would the owners of the animal have responded? We don't know. We can speculate. And we can wonder if the conversation would have begun to take everybody involved to an unexpected place. Maybe one that they found challenging, disorienting, one that made them uncomfortable, one that made them think. Why are you doing this? It's not just a hypothetical question, but it's one that runs throughout this story. And it's one that can be posed not only to disciples as they lay claim to a cult, but to Jesus and to the crowds, and indeed, ultimately, to you and to me. So let's start with Jesus. Why are you doing this? Why is he coming into the city this way? Well, the Gospels tell us, at least Matthew and Luke, that he did it in fulfillment of prophecy. Specifically, Zechariah 9:9 talks about the king riding into the city on a colt. And there are commentators who pick up this theme and say that Jesus was following the divine will, doing what he was preordained to do. There are others who say that Jesus was engaged in political theater. That he's trying to make a statement. All supposition. Jesus himself doesn't tell us here exactly why he wants that colt. But he does give us some clues, particularly if we look back earlier in this gospel and think about how he began his ministry. You remember what he told the people? Repent and hear the good news. The time of the Lord is at hand. Well, guess what? At hand means now. Jesus entering into the city of Jerusalem is beginning the final chapter of his earthly ministry. And he's doing it in a way that is meant to send a message. In the ancient world, kings didn't walk, they rode. But just like a present-day ruler who usually has his or her choice of modes of transportation, think of the president. The president gets a car, a jumbo jet, a helicopter. That's pretty cool. Gets to choose. Same with the king. Way back when, there in the Near East, 2,000 years ago, how the king traveled not only conveyed his status, but also his intent. Yes, by riding into Jerusalem, Jesus is saying he is a king. He could have walked in, just like all of the other people who were coming up to the holy city for Passover. He rode in. But he chose a colt, which is what the monarch would ride in peace. He didn't come in on a war horse. He's a king coming in peace. One commentary I read offered a wonderful image, and there's no way to know if this was true, but I loved the symmetry in it, of Jesus coming in from the Mount of Olives in the east on his colt, accompanied just by his disciples, embodying a message of peace, while Pilate enters from the west, coming from Caesarea, where he was normally headquartered. But he would have been coming into Jerusalem at Passover to maintain order. He would have been accompanied by legionaries. He would have ridden in on his steed. He too would have said he was coming in peace, but he was bringing Caesar's peace. And we don't know how he would have been received by the population. Maybe they were uncomfortable. Maybe they were unnerved. Maybe they were sullen. Or maybe they just liked a big spectacle. But the Gospels tell us how Jesus was received when he came into Jerusalem. People laid down cloaks, and they sang songs. Some accounts we see people waving the palm fronds. They're excited. And we don't know how many people turned out. Could have been 10. Could have been 10,000. But if we had posed the question to them, why are you doing this? They would have told us. We're waiting for the Messiah. We are waiting for the house of David to be restored. We're done with the Romans. We want our own king. We want our own kingdom. We want to be free. They celebrated the arrival of Jesus because they believed a promise that had been made long ago was being fulfilled. It was, but not in the way they expected. And as a result, as they began to think about what they saw, the heir of David showing up with 12 guys to confront Rome, and then turning around and leaving after he's looked about Jerusalem, they began to think, maybe this isn't the liberator we're looking for. And we know in just a few days, Jesus will be all alone. At least in this moment, as he retreats from Jerusalem, the disciples come with him. Would you have left with him? Would I have left with him? Or would we have melted away? That leads us to the question for today, for this hour. Why are you doing this? Why am I doing this? Why are we here this morning? Have you looked outside the window? When was the last time we saw a sky this blue with temperatures this warm? Could be out hiking, riding a bicycle, going for a run, reading the paper, enjoying a cup of coffee or tea. Why are you doing this? Why are you here? Why am I here? I suspect because we're looking for something. Some word of hope. Some word of grace. Some element of power. But to what end? To what purpose? Just as when we read this story, we can easily identify the who, the what, the where, the how, and the what. Think about who, Jesus, and the disciples. The what, preparation and execution of a plan to enter in Jerusalem. When, before Passover. Where, Mount of Olives to Jerusalem. How, go borrow a colt, go in. The why, an open question then, an open question for us now. Why are we doing this? Jesus was clearly involved in a symbolic act. And symbols mean things to people. Symbols are a way for people to hold on to something, to try to understand something. Think about how we do worship today. We all saw the kids process in. It was encouraging to see so many children participate in worship this morning. We do this. I did this. Because I want, through song and action, to help bring the story alive. To give us something to think about. I also want our children to have a memory that they can carry with them when we're there at the center of worship. I can guarantee you, kids who don't get to participate in worship are going to remember that for a very, very, very long time. Kids know when they're not wanted. We try to involve them here. So the procession is a symbol. the stole I wear. It's supposed to be a symbol of my service, reminding us of what Jesus does. This is supposed to represent a towel used to wash the feet of people. We have here at the center a cross decorated for Lent. Lent's not over, folks. It runs through Saturday. We'll get back to that in a moment. We have a cross here, the focus of our attention. But we also have other symbols in this sanctuary. Ones that should prompt that question of, why are you doing this? What is the aim? What is the goal? Consider over there, we have an American flag. I love the Stars and Stripes. I love this country. But there is no ecclesiastical or theological reason for an American flag to be in the sanctuary. None. And for those who are up to speed on their flag etiquette, we have given the flag of the United States the place of honor over the church flag, which was thoughtfully invented by an American some years ago, so churches could have a flag too. Why are we doing this? Is it because we're hoping that God will bless our country? Is it because we want our country to endorse the church? Thousands of churches across this land and other houses of worship and other faiths have American flags in their sanctuaries. Why? Why are we doing this? I offer this question to prompt thought and reflection. Lent's not over. There are so many things we can ask of ourselves. We still have time to engage in prayer and consideration of what we do and what we don't do and why we do it. And if we do this individually and as a community, I believe that we're going to have a better handle not only on why we're doing things, but also on how the story comes to an end, how the article is closed, and why Jesus does what he does.